I'll tell you that tonight we're going to have some text and then some test. Joseph has revealed himself to his brothers. We read up to that last week. In his revelation to his brothers, verse 5, chapter 45, verse 5, "Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance." What we have seen here so far in chapters 37 through 45 is God preserving his nation Israel. There's a famine in the land. Its extent extends into Canaan, and we read a little bit about that in preparation for tonight. And God had to move his people around to keep them preserved from the famine. So he's moved them into Egypt. The rest of this book, we're kind of coasting. There's some important information in it. But we're going to kind of coast to the end. The rest of this book really gives us some information that will help us understand, or that we'll see a lot of, the rest of the Old Testament and even up into the Gospels. All right. Joseph, with in chapter 45, with Pharaoh's blessing, says to his brothers, "Move to Egypt." And he sends gifts to all of them. Benjamin gets more. And then his father, he sends wagon loads of gifts to them. In the end of chapter 45, verse 27, "When they all told him the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob was revived." So he's been enduring years of suffering. Depression, really, is what it would amount to, because he thought that Joseph, his most loved son, had been dead. Well, he finds out he's not dead, he's alive. Not only is he alive, but he's some dude. Also, he's got a great position. Mm-hmm. I do
think that maybe they were lying to him. That he in some way, he think maybe they were lying.
When
they first told him, it said his heart stood still.
Well, I'm not sure if that's not why I do. But in chapter 42, verse 36, when they say, "We've left Simeon behind, and we want to bring Benjamin." In chapter 42, verse 36, their father Jacob said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children." And he goes on to say, "Why did you tell them about my past so that they got to..." So it seems that he maybe suspects, "You guys have bereaved me of my children," plural, Simeon, and obviously the other one would be Joseph. That's as close to a confident assertion as I can get. Yes, I suspect he suspected. Okay, so, but he's happy now. Chapter 45, verse 27. "Then Israel said, 'It is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die.'" So Israel set out with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob," and he said, "Here I am." And he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will surely bring you up again, and Joseph will close your eyes." I want to take a moment to say something about what I have labeled as camping in Canaan. What we see here is Jacob is a little scared, or a little hesitant, I will say, to go down to Egypt. So God comes to him and says, "Jacob, don't be scared. Go down, I'll bring you back up." Now, let's just go through some history here. First of all, Abraham, with God's implicit authority, and we get that from the context, explicitly forbid Isaac from leaving Canaan to go to Haran. You remember that? "My son has to get a wife. Should I bring back your son?" "No! The son stays here, you go get him a wife." So, Isaac can't leave Canaan to go to Haran. Isaac was explicitly forbidden by God from leaving Canaan to to enter Egypt in chapter 26, verses 1 and 2, during a famine. So we see they're not supposed to leave Canaan. Jacob left Canaan and went to Haran with God's explicit permission. God had already said this, I'll go with you, I'll be your God, and I'll bring you back, I'll make you prosperous. Then he returned upon God's explicit directive. Jacob, you've been here long enough, now go back to the promised land. Jacob left Canaan and went to Egypt, right here, at God's explicit directive. Israel left Egypt and returned to Canaan at God's explicit directive. Moses comes along, let my people go, we're going. Israel was explicitly told to leave Canaan and go to Babylon. This is some years later, and we haven't covered that yet in our study. But Jeremiah 21, go. The people who stay are going to die. Go to Babylon. Israel was explicitly told not to leave Canaan to go to Egypt. Those who did not go to Babylon thought, hey, maybe we should go to Egypt. Jeremiah, should we go to Egypt? Jeremiah says, God through Jeremiah says, no, don't go. Then Israel was told explicitly to leave Babylon and Egypt and Assyria and everywhere that they were to return to Canaan, Ezra 1. And then you remember Joseph, Jesus' stepfather, was told to leave Canaan to go to Egypt and then told to leave Egypt to return to Canaan. What we see here is what I would think of as a pattern. The pattern is, God is saying to these people, you stay in the land, and you go when I tell you to go, and you come back when I tell you to come back. What we see here is a pattern of them. We have the song, the name of it is not Wait on the Lord, but that's what I think of it as. Number 23 in our supplemental says, Jesus, that's not the right number, number 63?
The Lord is my light.
Yeah. I think it's number 63. Yes. The Lord is my light, my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The context is actually different. It's not talking about the land of Israel. But listen to it. The Lord is my light, my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Okay. In other words, this person is having a problem. They're struggling with, apparently, somebody. And you can apply this to any problem you have. What am I going to do? Whom shall I fear? The Lord is my light. He is my strength, the defense of my life. Whom shall I fear? And then what does it say? Wait on the Lord. In other words, you're going to run into situations where I want to do something. What am I going to do? And you want to do something, but the answer is wait on the Lord. Have mercy, O Lord. Answer my cry. Turn not away, for thou art my help, the God of my salvation. Turn not away. O Lord, lead me now in thy path straight and even. Teach me thy way. I will not despair. Thy goodness sustains me. Teach me thy way. To dwell in his house all the days of my life, this shall I seek. And oh, to behold the Lord in his beauty, this shall I seek. Wait on the Lord. So, the person's got problems. And he's wondering, hey, what am I going to do? And he says to himself, I'm going to wait on the Lord. And then his own answer is, teach me thy way. The answer is right here. And then the next thing we do, we see him, he's saying, to be in God's house, that's all I want. If we just wait on the Lord, doing what he says, that's where we're going to go. Now, that was an application. Here's something that I want us to keep in mind. I think it's relevant. This relationship of these people to the land of Canaan. Okay, the reason why I bring all this up is, do you remember in Genesis chapter 12, we are introduced to Abraham. Abraham receives the promises, and then where does he go? Egypt. Because of a famine. Gets into some trouble with Pharaoh, and then Pharaoh escorts him back out. Now, the question is, should Abraham have gone down there? I'll never know the answer. I don't know because it's not necessarily implied anywhere. But considering this pattern that we see, I'm here to suggest that maybe he shouldn't have. And you notice, number one, there is no prohibition, but there is no directive, Abraham, go down there. He's escorted back out to the place where it says he was in the beginning, right back to where he was. And then, in chapter 24, when Isaac has to get a son, what does Abraham say? This land. Don't take him out of here. He's got to stay in this land because God gave me this land. It sounds like Abraham has deduced what I'm deducing. I don't know for sure. At the same time, I cannot prove anything. But somebody else during a famine, a time of a famine, left Israel and went to another land. Do you remember who I'm talking about? Okay. I was going for Ruth originally. I don't know if Eli Melech, the father, should have made that decision. I know, you know what? A whole bunch of Israelites stayed in Canaan. I know that. Should he have gone? I don't know. But if somebody were to jump up and down and say, he didn't have faith and that's why he left, I wouldn't necessarily say you're wrong, although I wouldn't jump up and down and say you're right either. Okay. Just be aware of this in the land. Stay in the land, and we leave the land when God says, and we come back to the land when God says, and we're just waiting on the Lord to speak. I guess I didn't ask any questions. Questions? Okay. Who brought their answers? Sorry. All right, let's pick up in, from the beginning. How did Pharaoh react to Joseph's family? Ethan?
He was pleased, and he gave them the best of the land.
How did news of Joseph affect Jacob? Jacob?
He was stunned.
Yes, and my version follows with he was revived. Chapter 46, what did the Lord say to Jacob? Yeah, go multiply and I'll bring you back. Okay, how many Israelites were in Egypt? Jonathan? John?
All of them.
Yeah. Notice I didn't, yeah. Okay, anybody else want to?
What's your answer, Lee?
I didn't put anything down. No, I put down 70.
70 went in, so I'm saying
well, more than 70 actually went in, but that's the number
there.
There
are some there, so.
We'll come back to this. Where did they settle, Gary? Yeah. And what did the Egyptians think of shepherds? Let's come back up here to John. Go ahead, answer another one.
As I recall, I didn't answer this, but I think it's they did not like them, and it's where they were glad that they were in a different place.
Glad they were over in a different place, remember that. Chapter 47, who blessed whom? And let's go to George.
Jacob blessed.
Yes, and how did Jacob describe his life, Ethan?
Few and evil were the days of my life.
Right. And describe the land Israel was given. Anyone, quickly.
Best land.
All right. So, in chapter 46, we have Israel, Jacob coming to Israel. In chapter 46, verse 26, all the persons belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2. All the persons of this house of Jacob who came to Egypt were 70. Okay. The 60 and 6, which is like the 90 and 9, but it's a little bit different. Minus 33. In chapter 46, verse 27, it said 70. Okay, what's going on? I'll tell you right up front, I don't know. Let me take a stab at it. 66 does not include the 4 that 70 does include, namely Jacob, Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim. Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim are mentioned previously, but the 66, and so they would be included in the 70, but not necessarily in the 66, because Jacob isn't really included in the 66, but he could be in the 70. That's all I'm going to say. The math does work, all right? Acts 7:14, when Peter recounts this, he says that 75 people moved. If that wasn't helpful, I don't know what is.
Maybe he includes some wives. I don't know.
Maybe he includes some wives. Remember that. The Septuagint says the sons of Joseph who were born to him in the land of Egypt were 9. All the souls of the house of Jacob who came with Joseph to Egypt were 75. So, in chapter 46:27, our versions say 70. The Septuagint says 75. So, I imagine, I don't know for sure, if Stephen got his number from the Septuagint. And, of course, reconciling 66 with 75 would be the 9 children that the Septuagint refers to instead of the 2. Or, maybe They included some women in there when Stephen said 75. Or, and we could go on and on with not unreasonable explanations.
One is they all went down.
Okay, yes. And that may be the other answer. How many of them are there? 70. What is 70 a symbolic number for? Completeness. I'm not here to suggest that's what's going on. However, what I said is we can come up with a whole bunch of not unreasonable explanations. The question is there a contradiction? Because if it is, then we can go home and watch football. But there is not necessarily a contradiction. So that's all we need to know, okay? Our faith does not have to be shattered because one number in one verse says 66 and another verse says 70, with two verses right together. However, saying this, Deuteronomy 29:29 says what? The secret things belong to the Lord. Amen. This is one of those secret things. Why does one verse? But what has been revealed to us and to our children forever, so that we may observe the words of this law. Here's my point. We don't want to emphasize what the Holy Spirit pitched, but what He preserved. Whatever the Holy Spirit says, if there's a contradiction, then there is a contradiction. But if there's not, let's not dwell on it. In fact, I've wasted too much time on it already, haven't I?
I have a question.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily related to the numbers. But do we specifically know what the ethnic status was of all the wives that were coming in?
No.
Okay, so is that not perhaps one of the reasons why the account would be different? Because they would be considered Israelites, right? Or
they would be.
They would be?
Yeah.
Even if they married the foreign women or whatever?
Yeah, they would be assimilated into the
okay.
into the covenant. Okay. All right. Continuing with our questions, describe the land that Israel was given. I need to go on just a minute. So, in chapter 46, verse 28, he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out the way before him to Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and wept on his neck for a long time. And Israel said to Joseph, "Let me die now, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive." So there's the reunion that we've been waiting for so many years. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household, who were in the land of Canaan, have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks with their herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "You are servants. Your servants have been keepers of livestock from your youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians." Then Pharaoh went in and told Joseph went in and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brothers and their flocks, their herds, and all they have come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen." He took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" They said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers." They said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, therefore, please let your servants live in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen. If you know of any capable men among them, then put them in charge of my livestock." Four times in our text, actually last week's and this week's, it says, Goshen is the best land in Egypt. Now, last I knew, refugees don't usually get the cream of the crop. Unless what?
Their brother is second in command.
And who's really in command? God. That's what this is emphasizing. Look, the refugees come in, 70 or whatever, 70 people come into the land and they get the best of the land? Well, what's going on here? God is in control. Now, something else about God being in control here. Normally, if you do something that is despicable in a culture, you don't usually announce it, do you? But yet, what does Joseph say? You tell them that you're despicable. And what are they going to do? Leave you alone. John said something like when I asked about, describe Goshen. I forget what I asked John. But he answered, the Egyptians will be glad that they're over there. And that is exactly the point of going to Goshen. Not only is it the best of the land, the ESV study Bible maps have Goshen not within the Nile Delta, but right next to it. Many maps have Goshen right within the Nile Delta. So in those branches, like for you guys, it would be in this branch over here, okay? In other words, according to many maps, they are completely surrounded by water. They have natural geographic borders protecting them from people. Now, remember why part of the reason why God is moving Israel to Egypt is to get Israel away from the influence of the Canaanites. Well, what makes Egypt any better? Nothing. And that's why God, in their loathsome status, is putting them up, where nobody wants to talk with them. Where they will do what for how long? I know that's a very open-ended question, but what will they do for how long?
Proliferate
for 400 years. Yes, and they'll be all by themselves, not entirely, but that's the idea, at least while they're getting going, they'll be all by themselves. Okay, list what became Pharaoh's, George.
I wrote list what didn't.
That is easier.
Of the land, some of the land for the priests is
right.
Did not become. But by the time all said that, the land and the property and a fifth of the grain and
most of the people.
Yeah, most of the people. I mean, everything was Pharaoh's.
Yeah. Money, livestock, people, and land. What did Israel do? John, Gary, you've been skipped too often.
Before he died, he gave instructions to Joseph concerning his burial, but also that he grew and multiplied exceedingly.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking for the nation, Israel.
Okay.
Yeah, good enough. Okay, so they come into the land here. By the way, verse 13, chapter 47, verse 13. There was no food in all the land because the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished. Okay, understand this is not just in Egypt. We know this already, but it's up into Canaan, the land of Canaan. The point is Israel really had to move. Okay, they languished, which is further emphasized by all of the money going to Egypt, all of the land going to Egypt, and all of the people going to Egypt. Israel really needed help. let me ask you a quick question. You read the text. You're walking down the street and somebody who doesn't think favorably of the Bible says to you, Joseph exploited the Egyptians. What would you say? Define exploit, maybe.
Yeah, just say define
He took advantage of them. And when they came out of the deal, they were so much worse off. They were in slavery, the Egyptians, not the Israelites. They owed everything, the Canaanites, everybody owed everything to Pharaoh. Pharaoh made out big time and everybody else was, it wasn't fair. They lived.
I mean, Joseph interpreted a dream that prepared them for a famine.
Mm-hmm. Which if he hadn't have interpreted the dream.
They would have languished like Canaan.
Right. Yeah?
I was going to say also in verse 24, after the famine's over, he says, four fifths shall be your own. As the seed for the field for food, and one fifth shall be Pharaoh's. So they were.
Does that sound like tyranny?
No.
No, not at all. Four fifths. I get to keep four fifths. I think we pay more than four fifths in more than one fifth in taxes, don't we? Okay. And notice they're going to die, as you all pointed out. Verse 19, why should we die by us in our land? and we will be slaves to Pharaoh. They volunteer, and then where is it now in chapter, same chapter, verse 25? They come up to him, and they say, "You have saved our lives." Doesn't sound like they had a problem with what happened, does it? Not only did they have their lives, but they had 4/5. So if anybody, and this is out there, people are saying, the scholars especially, are saying that Joseph was an exploiter. Well, read it again, I guess. By the way, before I move on too far, I ask the question, who blessed whom? Who's Pharaoh? And who else is he according to their tradition? The son? He's a god or God's representative. Now, in the book of Hebrews, it says something about somebody blessing somebody. What normally happens when somebody blesses somebody? Right. So when Jacob comes in and blesses God, what's that an admission of? He knew what he was, or shall we say, he knew what he was not. But yet people believed it. And the point is, people will believe anything. So don't be surprised when you hear what people have believed in the past, what people believe right now, and another 100, 150 years from now, what people will believe again. What comes around goes around. Ethan? Comments or questions here on? Yeah, Gary.
This scene here is interesting to me, as the bigger sense is the stage that God is setting. What is he doing with Egypt now? They're becoming bigger. Bigger world power by gathering all this wealth, gathering everything all together, gathering all. I mean, they're the greatest nation on the face of the earth, if you will. And then God says, "I'm calling my people out. I'm going to show myself to them." Now you see the stage building. But when we did chapter 50, we go to Exodus. Stage is set.
Yeah. I hesitate to call it an excellent point, and let me explain why. I wanted so very much to say that.
Oh, sorry.
No. But I wasn't going to, because I think that I harp on that too much. So I wasn't going to say it at all. So I'm glad you did. Because why did God move Israel to Egypt? To preserve them. That's only half the answer. The other half is, he's setting up for 400 years down the road when he's going to announce himself to the world. Yeah, he's moving Israel to Egypt to save them, but he could have done that. He could have sent, I think, manna coming from the... Right? No, he's setting himself. There's a bigger picture here. I'm glad. Thank you, Gary. Okay. Have you looked at any other of my notes here before?
No.
In fact, I'm reading your notes probably. Okay. So here we are. Let's continue. Genesis 48. What became Jacob's? Ethan.
Ephraim and Manasseh.
Ephraim and Manasseh became as whom? Jacob. Okay, yes. Reuben and Simeon is what I'm looking for. We'll see that in a minute. How did Jacob put Ephraim before Manasseh? Gary or John? John?
Switched his hands?
Yeah. And what did Joseph receive? George?
Is George?
Yes.
I just wrote verse 22.
Yes.
To give you one portion more than your brothers.
Right. And chapter 49, list what Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah received. Go ahead, George Bosworth. You did so well in the last one.
I put a slightly frowny face. I mean, like, I read it all.
That's probably what they had, except for Judah.
Right. Well, yeah. And it was mixed.
Yes.
Is the thing is, they weren't receiving your standard blessing from a father, you know.
Well, the first three were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. All right. What we're going to see in chapter 47, and we'll just touch on it very quickly, verse 27, Israel lived in the land of Egypt in Goshen. They acquired property in it, were fruitful, and became very numerous. So they're settled, and they're exploding now, is what's happening. Jacob lived in the land another 17 years. He makes his dying wish, "Please bring me back." We'll talk more about that in a minute. Chapter 48 and 49... What we see in here, earlier I referred to, we see some things in this text that we will see from now on in the Old Testament, even into the Gospels, and if you want to go more than that, you can say into the rest of the book too, even in the Revelation, right? So we're going to see some things that have significance there. Chapter 48, verse 1. It came about after these things, Joseph was told, "Behold, your father is sick." So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with him. By the way, who is the oldest?
Manasseh.
When it was told to Jacob, "Behold, your son Jacob, Joseph has come to you," Israel collected his strength and sat up in bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and numerous, and I will make you a company of peoples and will give you this land to your descendants after you for an everlasting possession. Now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine.'" This is what we call a forced adoption. Okay. "Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine as Reuben and Simeon are." Okay. Who is Reuben specifically?
Firstborn.
According to their tradition, what did the firstborn child receive?
Double portion.
Double portion. However many children you have, you add one, divide the inheritance, and the oldest son gets that extra portion. All right. 1 Chronicles chapter 5 explains what's happened here. Not that we need to read it explicitly, but we will. First Chronicles 1:5, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel. And then inserts parentheses, "For he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that he is not enrolled in the genealogy according to his birthright, though Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came the leader, yet birthright belonged to Joseph." Oh, 1 Chronicles 5. Sorry. Okay. 1 Chronicles 5. That was 1 and 2. 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2. Whatever I said, that's what I meant. So, you probably heard me read it. Reuben lost the birthright is what it says. So, Joseph receives the birthright in his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. Verse 21 of Genesis 48. Israel said to Joseph, and this is after he's made the switch, we'll talk about that in a minute, "Behold, I'm about to die, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. I give you one portion more than your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow." So, this will explain in the future why we see Ephraim in Manasseh. By the way, where do we see Joseph? What'd you say? His bones, right. I hope you can see. Can you see these borders at all? Okay, good. You look through there, you won't find Joseph. Why not? Because of what we're reading right here. This is why when you go through all the tribes, when they're in the land, you don't find Joseph. Instead, you find Ephraim and Manasseh. Manasseh's got a lot of land there, right? Okay. So remember, I'm saying we're seeing stuff in here that explains maps that we look at for 1,000 years. Okay. More about that in a minute. But back here in Genesis 48, Manasseh's the firstborn. Something happens here. Verse 12. "Joseph took them from his knees and bowed his face to the ground. Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand towards Israel's right." Manasseh's the oldest. If Manasseh has his left hand next to Israel's right, I can't do it, I'm not two people, but he's over here, so Jacob can reach out with his right hand, the hand of blessing, and give it on the firstborn. While Ephraim is standing here, his right hand to Jacob's left, and he can do that. Okay, so Joseph lines them up correctly. Verse 14, "But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh, his head, crossing his hands." So he goes out and he does this. Well, that's a little odd. And it says, "Although Manasseh was the firstborn, he blessed Joseph and said, 'The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil. Bless the lads. May my name live on in them, and the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac. May they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. When Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him, and he grasped his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Joseph said to his father, "Not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head." But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also will become a people, and he also will be great. However, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations." He blessed them that day, saying, "By you Israel pronounced blessings, saying, may God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh." Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Manasseh was born first, but if I ask you to name the sons of Isaac, you would say Jacob and Esau, when actually it should be Esau and Jacob. And the sons of Joseph, you should say Manasseh and Ephraim, but we say Ephraim and Manasseh because of this right here. Now, speaking of Jacob and Esau, Jacob stole Esau's birthright, and that's how he got the birthright. But when God wanted to put Ephraim before Manasseh, how did Jacob do it? Just crossed his hands. That's all it was. If only Jacob had, what did we say earlier? We talked about the song, "Waited on the Lord." That's the difference in those two situations. We don't know much else about the situation with Ephraim and Manasseh, but we know that if Jacob had waited on the Lord, he wouldn't have had to steal it. Comment or question on anything we've seen so far? I like that comment.
Hang on. I've got it here. Where did it go?
Gary has a comment if you...
The blessing to Zebulun is that he'll live by the sea.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
Sorry.
That's chapter 49. Gary, answer that, would you? John, somebody? Did you want to say something? Okay. Now, Zebulun. No, okay. So let's go through chapter 49 quickly. Chapter 49... Jacob summoned the sons and said, "Assemble yourselves that I may tell you what will befall you in the days to come. Gather together and hear, O sons of Jacob. Listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity, preeminent in power, uncontrolled as water. You shall not have preeminence because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." A couple points from this. First of all, this is another illustration of delayed consequences. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 24 says, "The sins of some men go before them, and the sins of some people follow after them." In other words, sometimes it looks like you're getting away with it, but guess what? God knows. And it looked like to Reuben he was getting away with it, but Jacob so many years later is remembering it. By the way, time does not heal all wounds. We see that with Jacob over and over and over again. People say, "Oh, in time they'll forget about it." Not necessarily. In fact, you need to go to them and ask their forgiveness. That's what the Bible teaches. Okay, then in verse 5, by the way, Reuben was the oldest, should have had preeminence. The leader of Israel should have come from Reuben because he's the oldest, but we don't see that. In fact, Reuben just kind of goes away for the most part, right? I mean, Reuben's there, but you don't read so much about Reuben when you go through the text of the Old Testament. Verse 5, "Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence." You remember what they did in Shechem. "Let my soul not enter their counsel. Let not my glory be united with their assembly, because in their anger they slew men." There's a lesson there. In their anger they slew men. "And in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." Where do you find Simeon? Right in the middle of Judah. Exactly. And where's Levi? Yeah, in their 48 cities and different places that they would go. So we have the fulfillment of that. By the way, Simeon again and Levi are delayed consequences. He didn't say anything in Genesis 34. Remember, it says, and he didn't say anything or something like that. Well, here we are so many years later. He's finally saying something. Now we come to Judah. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Oh, not Reuben, not Simeon, not Levi. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Okay, so the fourth. That's weird. We're used to it, but it would have been weird for them to hear. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's son shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches. He lies down as a lion who dares rouse him up. Judah is a fighter. He's aggressive. He's in power. That's the kind of tribe that he will be. We could say more. Verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Okay, there's a lot in there, right? The scepter shall not depart from Judah. The scepter, obviously, is ruling. Now, throughout the judges, first of all, who would you say the first ruler, not God, the first human ruler of Israel was? Moses. Who was the second? Joshua of the tribe of Ephraim. And then number three, we have several different ones in the Judges. Number three, biggie, Saul of Benjamin. And finally, David, some 500 years later. In fact, more than 500 years later from here, roughly. Maybe a little less, actually. Okay, so we have Judah, the scepter not departing from Judah, the ruler's staff from between his legs. My version says, until Shiloh comes. Shiloh is a word that means peace, essentially. Until the peacemaker comes. There is a question of the vowel pointing, which means the ESV reads how, John, please?
ESV says, until tribute comes to him.
And yours says, Shiloh. Yeah, right. I think the ESV is the only one that is funny here. Okay, I'm no scholar, I don't know. All I can do is read what other people read. Okay, and even in that version will have a note that says, I'll just read it.
Until Shiloh comes, or until he comes to Shiloh.
Yes, or it goes on to say, until he comes to whom it belongs. You'll see that down in the bottom, like footnote L or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, okay. What are you reading out of? Okay, right. And that's a valid translation also. It always has to do with these little pointy words, and this little word can be translated different ways. But we see Shiloh, if it's Shiloh, the word is peace, okay? If it is, as the ESV says, and basically as yours says also, until he comes to whom it belongs, it refers back to the scepter. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, the ruler's staff from between his feet, until him to whom it belongs comes. Anyway, you go with this. If you turn to Ezekiel 21, we don't have time to look at the whole context. I'm sorry, you're going to have to look it up. It's talking about Babylon being the instrument of God's wrath. And then there's going to be more problems to come. In all of that, you have to look it up. Verse 27, a ruin, a ruin, a ruin I will make it. This will also be no more until he comes, whose right it is, and I will give it to him. And whose right it is can be translated to him who belongs judgment. So, the one who judges is the one who holds the scepter. This passage, Ezekiel 21:27, seems to be alluding directly to Genesis 49:10, and of course, this is all pointing forward to the Christ. Now, For thousands of years, nobody ever doubted that this was the Christ until Christians started interpreting it as Jesus, and now Jews around the world say, oh no, this isn't referring to the Christ, it's referring to something else. We could get into that. But my point is this. It was unanimously accepted. This is referring to the Christ. And so that's how we interpret it. By the way, this is sandwiched. This prophecy. In our book of Genesis, we have three major prophecies. I hope you'll understand what I'm saying when it talks about the Christ. What's the first one that talks about the Christ?
Genesis 3:15.
The second one? Genesis chapter 12. Abraham through you. Now we have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now we have, through Jacob, Judah. Judah, it's going to come through you. And then through Judah, who specifically will it come through?
David.
And where is that? Do you remember? 2 Samuel 7. Remember these. They're good sermon outline for you. whatever you want to do with that. By the way, verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. And then my version will say, until Shiloh comes. Now, formally, nothing has to change after Shiloh comes. This word until. But what do we know happens after Shiloh comes? Israel is dispersed, and Jesus has, quote-unquote, the scepter in heaven, and that's where it's going to remain. Okay, the end of verse 10, to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. It is not necessarily implied here, but very often throughout the Scripture, peoples, plural, refers to Jews and Gentiles, and by the way, there are Jews now, but not the law of Moses. Not yet, right? Okay, and verse 11, he ties his foal to a vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He's just got it all. Judah, everything's working out for Judah. Zebulun will dwell at the seashore. Okay, he came within 10 miles, and some of the roads that were on his, like the King's Highway, other roads came through. I say like the King's Highway, not the King's Highway itself. Came through Zebulun and would go 10 miles down to the sea coast. That's all I can tell you.
Some maps have this. Some of the maps have it closer to the sea of the top side.
Yeah. What's going on here? But I'll say this too, and we can save this discussion not for tonight, but there are times when the Lord makes promises to Israel about the land that he is not actually including everything he says. And the way you know that is by tracing everything he says about the land. It's very difficult. For example, Moses was never allowed to go where? Into the land. But yet, in some of the language where it seems like God is promising you're going to receive this land, Moses would be in that land. So we know that God isn't actually promising that land to them as much as the language sounds like it. That might be complicated, and I'm not saying that God language doesn't mean anything. I'm saying that we can figure it out, okay? All right, let's go on here. The rest of them are kind of insignificant. And throughout the history of Israel, were any of the other tribes ever really significant? Ephraim was huge.
And you basically have two that are extremely significant, Ephraim and Judah.
Ephraim and Judah, and that's really it. So the rest of Joseph receives the most amount of attention in this. But, you know, there it is. It's Judah and it's Ephraim. And then Benjamin later on will come down to Judah. By the way, the scepter never leaving Judah may be in comparison to the scepters that other tribes had. Each tribe had ruling, had an identity, I'll put it that way. But not forever. Before the exile, most of the other tribes are non-existent anymore as tribes within and of themselves, okay? But Judah and Benjamin were always Judah and Benjamin.
And what's the point of saying that the others are going to bow down to you?
Yeah.
That your scepter is going to be above them.
Right.
So, I take it as they're
the rulers. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Chapter 49, he asks to be buried. Verse 29, I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in Ephron, the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephron the Hittite for the burial site, where they buried his family. Verse 33, when Jacob finished charging his sons, he drew up his feet into bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. So Joseph mourns, embalms him. There are two people embalmed in the Old Testament, Joseph and his father, Jacob. Joseph embalms him, brings him back, and buries him. Then his brothers come up to him and say, you're not going to chop our heads off or sell us into slavery or imprison us now, are you? And he says, no, because I'm not that way. Remember his response? What does he say? In verse 19, Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? Joseph knew, vengeance is God's. Let him take care of it. I always do what is right. As for you, you meant it evil against me. He reminds them one last time. But God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. If only the world were made up of more Josephs, starting with myself. Now Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household. Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw the third generation of Ephraim's sons. Also, the sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were born to Joseph's knees. Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely take care of you, bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on an oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here. So Joseph died at the age of 110 years old, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. This is interesting. Joseph is in Egypt, and where is all of his family? In Egypt. But yet, what is he still saying? We're going back. That's kind of odd. In fact, the odds are against it. All of them, where are they living? They've got the good land in Egypt. They're buying. They're multiplying. It seems like the odds are against this, but yet he's saying, no, we're going home sometime. And Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that both Jacob, his father, and Joseph, by faith, they said, bring me back to the land, even though they never saw it. So, here they are, Israel's in the land of Egypt. What's going to happen? Comments or questions? Yes, sir.
Well, Joseph seems, because if you remember, Joseph was an awful little pest when he was part of Solomon's part of that. But he's changed.
Yeah.
And to me, that's important. Joseph wasn't always, even by the grace of God, that Joseph was in trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the same with all of them, really. Very good point. Right. Okay, we'll stop there. No test. Lucky you and me.